Hello, everyone. Patriot Underground here. Now, before we start the show tonight, I just want to remind everybody to check out patriotswitch.com. Clearly, if you're listening to my broadcast tonight, you are one of the ones that genuinely cares about the direction that we are headed, not only as a country, but as an entire human species. The entire world is at stake. And more, we are realizing that we are engaged in the most epic battle in all of human history, really. And it's being waged in unprecedented ways. And one of the ways, and one of the theaters in this war in which we have the ability to strike back at the enemy is emerging through companies like Patriot Switch that give you the opportunity to align your financial resources with your value system and to reject the value system that's associated with the vertically integrated big box conglomerates that are all owned by BlackRock and Vanguard, as we know. This is a movement that is gathering steam with every passing day, and I am really proud to be a part of this. Patriot Switch is not only offering at this point personal and household products, but they have recently moved into the beef industry as well. This is a very, very exciting time to get involved with Patriot Switch, especially given how many uncertainties there are in terms of the supply chain. Make the switch today, folks. Get ahead of the curve. Join this movement. Secure your family's needs and do it in a way that you can be proud of. This is how we change the world together. PatriotSwitch.com. All right, folks, enjoy the show. Patriot out. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Underground. Today is January 25th, 2023. Thank you so much for joining me, folks, to discover the truth beneath the surface. I really do appreciate everybody out there taking the time to listen. So tonight I'm going to provide a situation update, and I'm going to delve into the most recent updates on multiple different fronts. And as I've been saying recently, the tide has indeed shifted, and an entirely new era is just over the horizon for humanity. And what we're seeing now is the culmination of all the traps the White Hats have set, which are leading to military intervention. This is an epic tapestry that has been brilliantly woven together by some of the most incredible minds in all of human history. And I do believe that sentiment will be shared by virtually everyone once all of this is said and done. And we no longer have cause to criticize or fear the unknown. But believe me when I tell you, folks, that this cycle of deception, expectation, disappointment, all of it is very soon going to come to an end as the different pieces in the puzzle continually come together. So with that being said, let's just jump right in and discuss some of the financial elements that we're facing and analyze the White Hat strategy as it pertains to ushering in the QFS. So what's been happening in essence is that the White Hats have been propping up Wall Street banks to solve the derivative problem so they don't end up draining personal bank accounts. And as Jim Willis pointed out, all of the big banks at this point are insolvent. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, Citibank. And this is due to derivative exposure. Regional banks don't have anywhere near the same level, and therefore they're much safer than the big Wall Street banks in terms of the risk that these institutions will quite literally steal your money in order to mitigate their losses and prop up their fiat system. And as I pointed out in a recent interview with Mel Carmine, CBDC will be used to crash the economy. But this is a White Hat operation because there isn't any place for two systems. You got to understand that all of the old money is being siphoned into the QFS covertly. And to really grasp what's happening, you need to go back to 2020 and understand how both Trump and Mnuchin took control of the Federal Reserve by backing it into the Treasury. So let's talk about that a little bit. Now, to really grasp how this whole thing came together, you have to go back to the 1990s, bare minimum. And you have to begin with an analysis of the dot-com bubble crash. And truthfully, you could go back really to the beginning of the century, and you could examine how the Federal Reserve, since its inception, has been creating all of the boom and bust cycles. But we'll start at the 90s. That's a good place to begin because what happened was, of course, the internet was in its infancy. And at that point in time, there was a significant amount of FOMO or fear of missing out because stocks were soaring based upon pure speculation that all of these internet companies were going to thrive in this newly created marketplace. But the problem was that most of these internet companies had no solid business plans behind them and were in a significant amount of debt. And by the time investors began to figure this out, right around March of 2000, all of the dot-com investors began running for the exits. And during this time, the Federal Reserve raised rates, I think about 6 times, which ended up crashing that bubble, or I should say, bursting that bubble, because this made it much more expensive to borrow money. And the internet startups couldn't cover their debts. And not only that, they weren't producing any products or services of actual value. Again, most of this was based upon pure speculation. And everyone was trying to get in on the party in an attempt to get rich quick. So what happened was, as the economy was slowly recovering, the people who had been wiped out in the stock market began to invest in real estate. Because the Federal Reserve, by that point, had dropped interest rates so low that it was really hard to resist the temptation to invest in a tangible asset. That was the attitude at the time. So that's what people did. And it was all in an effort, of course, to try to recover their losses from the dot-com crash. And once again, the Fed had made it super cheap to borrow money, which historically is how they always lure people into their trap, by jacking up interest rates once people are already in debt and they can't pay it back. So what happened was, this led to the creation of collateralized debt obligations, or CDOs as they're called, which are essentially mortgages purchased from the big banks and packaged together to be sold as securities all over the world. And of course, the banks made astronomical profits by doing this until they became too greedy and essentially drained all the liquidity from the system. Not only that, derivatives, which are basically financial contracts that derive their value from an underlying asset, derivatives came onto the scene at this point, really in the form of credit default swaps, which were being sold by institutions that couldn't pay out. And credit default swaps, for those who don't know, are basically bets on whether these collateralized debt obligations would default, which they did. And when that happened, and there was no money to pay off the investors and no liquidity, of course, it led to trillions of dollars of exposure. And the entire market was set to collapse. And this was in 2008. So at this point in time, the Federal Reserve had to prevent the entire economy from imploding. And what they did was utilize a tool that was built into the Federal Reserve Act, which was a clause entitling them to be the lender of last resort in case of emergencies. And this obviously was one. So they created what are called special purpose vehicles, or SPVs for short, to prevent these catastrophic events by buying securities not in their charter, like stocks, CDOs, collateralized debt obligations again, and other assets, which were really all toxic at the time. Because typically, the Federal Reserve only buys government-backed securities. But these SPVs enabled them to buy essentially any type of asset in order to stabilize the economy. And in order to do this, they drew upon what's called the Exchange Stabilization Fund, or the ESF, which was written into the Gold Act of 1934. And what that is a reserve that they can draw upon to stabilize markets in extremely volatile situations to prevent economic meltdown. And so they used the ESF and the special purpose vehicles during 2008 and 2020, but to very different ends, as I'm going to explain in just a moment. But the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the ESF, allows the Treasury to intervene in the markets to offset volatility. And by the way, it enables them to do it without congressional approval. And part of this is understanding what are called special drawing rights, or SDRs. And I know I'm throwing a lot of three-letter acronyms around, but bear with me, because this is really important. Now, SDRs, special drawing rights, are essentially international reserve, what they're called are pseudo-currencies created by the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, in 1969, and they were created from a basket of national currencies backed by nation-state governments, which allowed the U.S. Treasury to coordinate with the IMF to stabilize exchange rates. And these funds can be converted into U.S. dollars, into gold, or other securities by exchanging with the Federal Reserve. Now, obviously, there's more detail that goes into all this, but this is just a basic backdrop to understand the Fed's purchasing power and the levers which enable them to control markets to enrich themselves. Remember that this entire system is vertically integrated. Now, obviously, this was during Obama's tenure. And so essentially, he had Ben Bernanke do all of the purchasing through the use of these special purpose vehicles, and they stabilized the economy by absorbing all of these toxic assets. But in the process, of course, the average investor got absolutely wiped out. Meanwhile, all the institutionalized investment bodies, the hedge funds, were more or less reimbursed for the losses that they had caused. And it's important to understand that at this point in time, the Federal Reserve purchased these assets through special purpose vehicles by lending money to the Treasury and collecting government bonds, which of course are paid back with interest. So in essence, this financial crash, like all others, ended up benefiting the private Western Central Bank at the expense of the taxpayer. So Bernanke did it all under Obama without the involvement of the Treasury in terms of decision making. They bought toxic assets dirt cheap and made lots of money while we the people just lost everything. So fast forward to 2020, when the Federal Reserve was audited behind the scenes. And to say that they failed this audit is the understatement of a lifetime, considering that there were literally trillions of dollars unaccounted for. And this led to the bankruptcy of USA Incorporated, as well as the arrest of many corrupt individuals at the Treasury who were filmed being arrested by Richard Citizen journalists. So this is when the moves started happening behind the scenes, which enabled the Fed to be back into the Treasury. And here's what happened. Trump and Mnuchin used those very same special purpose vehicles, those SPVs, to essentially roll the Federal Reserve into the Treasury. Only this time, instead of the Fed lending the money to the government and collecting bonds to be paid back with interest, the U.S. Treasury, due to a clause in the CARES Act, put up a small amount for the purchase, and the Fed incurred the debt. So this was, in essence, a turning of the tables, if you will, which enabled Trump and Mnuchin to take control of the Federal Reserve through the Treasury. Because through the CARES Act, they slipped in a clause that essentially said that the U.S. Treasury was in charge of making all decisions related to purchasing SPVs. And therefore, what this did was neuter the Federal Reserve in terms of their purchasing power. Now, interestingly, this relates to a Q drop on March 27th of 2020 that's become quite famous and referenced many, many times. Quote, "This is not another four-year election." And in that post, there was a link to a Twitter article that confirmed that Trump and the White Hats had taken control of the Federal Reserve. And like I said a moment ago, they used the CARES Act in order to do it by slipping in a clause stipulating that the Treasury gets to determine how to structure and implement SPVs, which neutered the Fed's power to generate revenue for the cabal. And this is key. Now the White Hats could use SPVs to integrate the cabal's stolen wealth, which had been recovered by the military alliance during the course of the underground war, into the Treasury. And by the way, my understanding is that the CARES Act itself has been a covert beta test for Nasara and Jassara to work out the kinks in terms of transferring repatriated wealth back into the system. So in essence, through the ESF, and by virtue of their control over the Fed's purchasing power through SPVs, the alliance used the Federal Reserve's money, which has been stolen from we the people through illegal taxes, to buy assets to fund Nasara and Jassara. And there's another element to this as well. Through Trump's executive orders and the USMCA Act, which essentially just replaced NAFTA, there were protocols which were established for freezing assets associated with nefarious activity. All corrupt money is now being put back into the system, into the QFS, using digital currency and blockchain technology. And accordingly, all products, services, and commodities on the Stellar network are being tokenized to establish and monitor their value to prevent fraud into the future. And this is also something that I talked about with Mel. Now, my understanding is that the Stellar blockchain is going to be the keystone of the quantum financial system. And it will connect with other blockchains as well, using what are referred to as bridges, like XDC, for example, which can reach into both online, offline, on-chain, off-chain assets. So for example, one US dollar can be sent anywhere in the world and be accepted in any digital asset denomination, which can then, of course, be transferred into physical cash. So this is the future. And as the QFS is rolling out, we're seeing the downfall of cryptocurrency, which is a cabal project, as opposed to digital currency, which is the way of the future, and what the white hats have been working on behind the scenes. Now, it's certainly difficult for many people to make that distinction. But I do believe that as more is exposed about Bitcoin, and probably about 95% of cryptocurrencies, that the public will be able to come into an understanding about the difference between the two, cryptocurrency and digital currency, and that one is actually backed by real value, whereas the other is just another manifestation of fiat funny money. And this disclosure is indeed happening. The Justice Department just came out and charged another crypto exchange called BitsLato, that's BitsLato, with money laundering. And this is just another example of the white hat systematically taking down the cabal's financial apparatus. And it's also a continuation of what we saw begin with FTX. So all of these illicit funds are being seized as the cabal's revenue stream is choked out by the alliance, like Sam Bankman-Fried's $700 million. And these funds, I do believe, will be used for debt relief, as well as to rebuild the nation's infrastructure. The White Hats are using the Treasury's power to seize assets in accordance with Executive Order 13848 to fund the QFS. So this is a two-pronged strategy to red-pill the public on crypto's connection to money laundering, and at the same time, to create a vehicle to reallocate all of that stolen wealth. And of course, this is happening amidst the backdrop of a worldwide financial and military realignment that's taking shape with increasing clarity every single day. Saudi Arabia is now going to join the BRICS nations. And the dismantling of the petrodollar, therefore, is happening now at breakneck speed. We also have France striking over Macron's pension reform bill, which essentially screws we the people over. But it's also very clear to those that are in the know that this is all theater. The French have already defected from NATO behind the scenes, and this will be evident very soon. It's also quite possible that we're going to see a military coup against the actor playing Macron as a part of this pantomime. And this dovetails very nicely with the next topic that I want to discuss, which is the escalation of the war in Europe. Now, Medvedev, again, just recently warned of nuclear escalation if Russia is defeated with NATO armaments. And to that end, we're hearing reports that Germany has officially sanctioned the use of Leopard tanks, and the United States is sending not only another $2.5 billion to Ukraine, but also Bradley fighting vehicles and Abrams tanks to the front lines. And I've also seen reports of Panzer missile systems being placed strategically on key targets in Moscow. So as Steve Bannon has recently pointed out, This war is about to escalate to World War II levels in Europe. And we've discussed many times the reasons why this is necessary. But folks, the deep freeze has begun, and so has the Russian offensive. I've heard reports of very heavy fighting as Russian forces are moving in to retake Bakhmut, which is an important region of the country that Gene Decode actually discussed in detail the last time I interviewed him. But the overall main strategic objective is to control southern Ukraine and choke off NATO's ability to move artillery and other tactical munitions into the region. The Russians are planning a three-pronged attack from the north, the east, and the south. And my understanding is that it's going to involve 2,000 Russian tanks, 4,000 infantry vehicles, and 5,000 artillery and tactical missile systems. Meanwhile, Ukraine is getting German Leopard system tanks that take hundreds of hours to learn. Ukraine doesn't have the time or the manpower for this, nor do they have it for the Bradley fighting vehicles and the Abrams tanks that the U.S. wants to send, which need to be refurbished before they're combat ready. And they also require intensive training to operate effectively. And all of this is going to lead to the dissolution of NATO, as they suffer what I believe will be a humiliating defeat at the hands of Russia and its allies. And I do believe that Russia intends to target NATO bases specifically to send a message before this becomes all-out war in Europe. However, the cabal is in such dire straits, as we know, that they really have no choice but to push, poke, and prod the Russian bear to generate the war that was engineered by Albert Pike so many years ago. But as I've said about so many different aspects of the enemy's plan, it's all going to be reversed on them. There has been very credible information behind the scenes that Russian intelligence is communicating with Ukrainian military commanders. And there is very likely a defection in the works to end the war and bring down Zelensky's regime. Not only that, Russia also controls satellites, which provide access to the power grid in Ukraine. So it's clear to see which side has the upper hand here. And this military operation, of course, will tie everything together to expose all of the cabal's evil in their ancestral homeland of Khazaria, while at the same time revealing Biden and Obama's treasonous actions, not only to fund every manner of depraved, nefarious activity through their central hub in Ukraine, but also to plot a coup against Donald John Trump. And this is all going to come out as a part of the end result of this war. And this is why the enemy is getting increasingly desperate and frantically pushing their climate change agenda, because they're somehow trying to redirect the narrative and shift public consciousness away from the emerging evidence of all of their evil, all of their criminal activity. This is a tactic that they've always used. They've mastered it. However, they've also always been in control of the information bullhorn up until very recently. And that's exactly why their propaganda machine is no longer effective at harnessing the focus and attention of the general masses away from all of their evil practices like they've done in the past. Nevertheless, the World Economic Forum clown show came to town and continued to push this climate change agenda as a part of this scripted drama to highlight their insanity and expose the cabal's ridiculous narrative to an ever-awakening public. And that's exactly what happened last week. We had the chairman of Siemens calling for 1 billion people to stop eating meat to combat climate change, which they're also attempting to claim is responsible for human trafficking. So we can see that the White Hats are putting on this dog and pony show to continue to wake people up. There's only so many times that you can hear the same ridiculous narrative before you begin to identify the lunacy behind it. And more specifically, the austerity that's being pushed upon the population of the world, openly, by a bunch of criminal tyrants who tell us that they'll own everything, control every aspect of our lives, and take away all of our freedoms in order for us to be happy. It's an overt, naked inversion of reality on steroids. And I do believe that it is snapping people out of their comas. And for those people who still haven't had their eyes open, you better believe that the reversal of the mainstream media narrative is having an enormous impact on this first stage of awakening, which is the process of navigating cognitive dissonance. Now, I know I've mentioned this before, but Trump's friend, John Malone, acquired CNN through Discovery Plus. And this is why we're starting to see the truth come out in little dribs and drabs on a platform we least expected it to emanate from. But the word is that he's cleaned house, and that's why CNN is beginning to red pill their audience by exposing the criminality within the Biden family, as well as at least some of the truth about COVID, which I'll get to in a moment. And furthermore, I'm hearing that Trump is going to work with Malone to eventually sue CNN for their role in conspiring to perform a coup against the sitting president. So this is akin to Elon purchasing Twitter to expose its criminality from within, and by extension, red pill the public. And then, of course, we have Anthony Fauci, who is soon to come directly into the spotlight once again like never before when the Twitter files drop. It just continually gets worse and worse for this modern manifestation of Josef Mengele, the Nazi angel of death who would have salivated at the chance to kill as many people as Fauci has with this bioweapon. And now we're getting news that a secret CDC report has emerged confirming that 120,000 children have died suddenly since the rollout of the jab as of October 2022. And of course, this is the same organization, the CDC, that just launched an investigation into the connections between the jab and cardiac events like stroke and myocarditis, then admitted that there's a connection but refuses to change its policy recommendation. You think this isn't waking people up? Folks, the fact of the matter is, the truth is coming out. And we also now know that HCQ, which Fauci launched a disinformation campaign about, allows viruses to attack cancer cells while leaving healthy cells alone. And this is why Japan just downgraded COVID to flu status. It's because the world is waking up to the reality that the real threat has always been the jab. A point which Elon just underscored when he tweeted that he felt like he was dying when he got the second shot, and that his cousin got myocarditis. So this just keeps getting worse and worse for the NIH and the entire medical establishment. FOIA emails have already confirmed that Fauci and his cronies colluded to facilitate a plot to silence virologists and scientists who were looking into the possibility of going to the FBI and going to MI5 to expose that SARS-CoV-2 originated in a lab, and therefore was both pre-planned and patented. And of course, another P word, premeditated. Premeditated genocide. So even though the Fauci Twitter files appear to have been delayed until February, rest assured that all of this is being timed meticulously to coordinate with other ongoing operations and disclosure, which has to happen first. And on the topic of disclosure, let's discuss fake Biden's classified documents, which is the latest scene in this pantomime that's been dominating the news cycle. It was very interesting to hear Kash Patel recently come out and announce that the investigation into Biden's classified documents actually began during the summer of last year, when the FBI was prompted to look for them after reviewing Hunter Biden's laptop. And of course, we know that they keep finding more and more of these classified documents, most recently in his Delaware home. Now, to frame this segment of our discussion, it's important to understand that both the cabal and the White Hats want fake Biden gone, obviously for very different reasons. The cabal had always intended to use Biden as a scapegoat for the downfall of the country on multiple levels, in the hope that Obama's criminal activity, including money laundering in Ukraine, the Iranian cover-up of Osama bin Laden's death, and the connection between the Five Eyes agencies and MI6 in their attempt to frame Trump with the Russiagate hoax. This was their strategy. They planned on having Biden take the fall in the event that the White Hats came into possession of his classified documents, and that the MSM could control the narrative so that the story would die with Biden's failing health, and also a planned Hunter Biden drug overdose at some point in the future. That was their strategy. So it's very likely that somewhere amidst all the fog of war, the cabal figured out that fake Biden was being forced to play a role by the White Hats. And this only intensified their desire to get rid of him in a way that would enable them to somehow redirect control over where the narrative is leading. But it's a failing effort. Folks, the reality is that the narrative is hopelessly out of enemy control at this point. And the main focus is to retain and activate any and all assets at their disposal to buy themselves time to devise effective strategies to mitigate the impact of all of these ongoing alliance operations. But they're failing in that regard as well. And their time is drawing near. Mark my words, folks. Justice is just over the horizon. And then just yesterday, the proverbial plot thickened when it was reported that Mike Pence found classified documents in his home. Shortly after which, Trump tweeted that the former vice president never knowingly did anything wrong and that he should be left alone. Now, as is typical with Trump's statements, this caused a lot of confusion initially. But the confusion at this stage of the game is not shared by nearly as many people as it used to be. Why? Because more and more of us have become accustomed to Trump's tactics. People understand that 45 operates in alignment with the principles of the art of war. He keeps his enemies close, and he puts them in the spotlight to expose their true character. And he did this with Pence, not only by choosing him as his running mate, but also, and this is very important, by putting him in charge of Operation Warp Speed. And I find this particularly interesting timing to have Pence back in the news, considering the Twitter files are beginning to emerge, and we're anticipating the full exposure of Fauci and COVID. It's very curious that Pence's judgment is now being called into question. Could it be that he's being set up to take the fall for managing the jab rollout and perhaps lying to Trump about its safety and efficacy? Well, obviously, nobody knows exactly how this is going to play out, but I think this is very likely a part of the disclosure strategy. Not only that, consider this development in light of Biden's classified docs, which were taken when he was vice president under Obama. Now, all of a sudden, the talking heads on MSM are between a rock and a hard place in the sense that they have to either admit a vice president cannot legally take classified documents, or they'll have to further shred their credibility by attempting to excuse Biden while condemning Pence. But either way, this plays into the White Hat objectives of revealing the truth about the classified documents, exposing their contents, and disclosing the criminal web of the cabal. And of course, we already know that Pence is a monster. And that's something that Trump's known all along. The same way he knew that eventually the Epstein story would come full circle as the keystone to fully expose the elite. I find it very interesting that Ghislaine Maxwell revealed during a jailhouse interview that she believes Epstein was murdered in prison. Well, that's like saying the sky is blue and water is wet. And let's not forget that two prison guards admitted to falsifying records in 2019 related to the night that he died and were later charged. But a fascinating aspect of this dynamic between Maxwell and Epstein really emerges when you discover that Ghislaine's father worked for Mossad and MI6. He used his connections with the CIA to funnel money to his daughter, to mastermind the blackmail operation using Epstein as a point person. And of course, we know that this is how they controlled elites and world leaders, ensuring their subservience to the cabal. Now, I happen to suspect that Epstein files are coming on Twitter as well, folks. The flight logs, the client list, all of this is going to come out when Maxwell's flip becomes public. The alliance has it all, and they're in the process of exposing Biden first to build the public narrative. So strap yourselves in, everyone. The ride is going to get bumpier as we get closer to the finish line. But hopefully, after listening tonight, you're confident, as I am, that we're not only proceeding with the plan effectively, but also that we've entered the final phases of the war to liberate humanity from the darkest evil we could possibly imagine. Hold the line and trust the plan. This is all leading toward military intervention. And remember, God is in control. All right, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. You can let me know in the comments. Please leave a like if you did. Also, be sure to follow me on the different platforms I'm on. I'm on BitChute, Rumble, and Podbean. You can also check out the links in the description and follow me on Truth Social and Telegram. And speaking of links, please check out patriotunderground.shop. You'll see it right in the description there. I have some really great items: Eagle t-shirts, beer mugs, coffee mugs, water bottles, hoodies, you name it. All high quality, very affordably priced. Thank you to everyone out there who's made a purchase. Also, folks, please consider becoming a patron. Want to send a shout out to all of my patrons. Thank you so much for your loving support and your generosity. And finally, folks, before I sign off tonight, I want to remind everybody to check out PatriotSwitch.com. Recently, they went into the beef industry, so now you can not only buy all of your household and personal products through Patriot Switch, but you can also purchase the best beef out there. This is unbelievable quality, folks. You owe it to yourself to check out the link in the description. Incredible quality in every category, but most importantly, folks, this is an opportunity for us to defund the enemy and to fund a company that supports the same causes and ideology and is waging the same war that we are against evil. Become a part of this movement, folks. Join the more than 2 million people who have already made the switch, along with several hundred members of my audience who are very happy overall. I have received excellent feedback, folks. PatriotSwitch.com. All right, folks. Thank you again for listening. I'll be back on Friday with Jesse Zaboder. Until then, God bless and Godspeed. Patriot out.